Welcome to Reroll Minnow.
Morning, everyone.
Hi.
Hi.
This is a show which brings you a female perspective. And we are your hosts, Sinead C. Shanti and
Susan Meow. How are you today, Sinead?
Brown.
Sorry.
I'm good, Suze.
Good.
I feel good today. The sun was shining. It feels like a good Tuesday.
Indeed, it is. It's pretty chilly though, but it is nice and warm in the studio.
Yeah, it is, as always. So as always, we are delighted to be here on UCC campus, live on UCC Radio. And we have a great show lined up for you today. We are going to be in conversation with the wonderful Anne Quinn, Innovation Manager and Change Leader at Children's Health Ireland. And we're going to chat out with Anne change strategies and the real magic ingredients for true, sustainable and impactful change.
Yeah, the humanness, I think, behind the Children's Hospital that's involved in their building and designing of the hospital, that really came through from Anne.
Yeah, exactly. We'll be hearing that very soon. But before we get to our discussion with Anne, we've got some really great tunes lined up for you guys as well. And I think we're going to start with a song today. And this one goes out to my sisters, especially Leishi. I gave you a shout out last week, Leishi, but you weren't listening.
Leishi!
Leishi's all the way down under in Perth. And Leishi has some decisions to make. She's got some career opportunities coming up and she's finding it hard to navigate. But it's all good, Leishi. These are good opportunities and good luck with
good
it.
Luck.
Listen to your gut. But in the meantime, have a good dance. So this one goes out to you. And I know that Elaine loves it too. So here we go. Take it away, Florence and Free.
Wakes me up.
Hope you guys are dancing your socks off, especially Leashy in Perth
and
Elaine in Garrettstown. So like I said, we've got a fantastic guest on the show for you, Anne Quinn, who is the Innovation Manager of Children's Health Ireland. Her background is in organisational development and change, with a focus on organisational culture, staff engagement and strategy development. Anne is interested in distributed and network innovations. She believes that innovation is possible at any and all levels of the organisation, and that by working creatively and empathetically with children, young people and their families, everyone at CHI has a potential to improve children's health and the experience of care. Anne holds a master's in organisational change and leadership development and a diploma in group work and facilitation skills. She is a qualified executive leadership coach and a trained facilitator in Lego, serious play, method and materials. And she is an absolute gem, isn't she, Suze?
Lovely.
Yeah, we had such pleasure.
Lovely woman.
Discussing change and unpacking change with Anne. And we're going to go to her interview now. Enjoy, and I'm sure you'll be as inspired as myself and Suze were. So Anne, you are many things, and one of the things you are is you're a change leader. You've got quite an epic undertaking. You're responsible for helping bring multiple teams through a big change process, and it's not an easy task. So you're involved in the National Children's Hospital, isn't that right?
Yeah. That's right. So I'm working with the, as part of a big team, I'm working with the three Dublin Children's Hospitals, and they've just recently come together as they're getting ready to move into a new, beautiful new building on St. James's campus in the middle of the city. So it's a great, really exciting time to be working in paediatrics, children's healthcare, and yeah, it's a great privilege to be part of it.
Amazing. And I love how upbeat you are, Anne, about it. Because earlier we were just saying, oh my God, Anne, how do you do such an epic job? And you're like, oh, it's fun.
I was like, wow.
Yeah. To me, that sounds like a massive undertaking.
Oh, I mean, it absolutely is. But I mean, it's there's a lot of people, you know, involved in the project and a lot of goodwill to make it happen. And I think the working in this sector, you know, in healthcare, the most important thing is you've got a real driving purpose, you know. So we're trying to improve healthcare for kids, which is essentially trying to improve the healthcare of the entire population, because everybody, you know, all children are going to grow up to be adults. So there's such an important piece of work that has to be done. And, you know, it's not always easy, and it's going to be a tough couple of years ahead. But I think because we have that driving purpose and a lot of people who are very dedicated around, you know, supporting kids and families, it makes such a difference. So, yeah, it's great. It's absolute privilege. Absolute privilege.
That's amazing. And that really amazing that that vision is so clear. Because sometimes when work can be a bit overwhelming or a little bit massive, the vision or the purpose can get lost. Mm-hmm. And I have a healthcare background myself, and often working in healthcare, you kind of forget, oh, what's my hospital or what's my clinic's vision again? Because you just get overwhelmed with the overwhelm.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That definitely happens. I mean, over the last couple of years in particular, and, you know, we had COVID, obviously, and then we had cyber attack. And then kind of those, you get over those things, and particularly in the children's hospitals this last winter has been really, really tough. Big upsurge in viruses and RSV, and COVID hasn't gone away completely. So it's just been a really, really tough couple of years for all staff working across healthcare in general, but for the children's hospitals as well. So to try and get people, you know, it feels like it's a tough job then to say, okay, now you've got this big change ahead and let's get ready. But what we're finding is actually when you do kind of get into it and start thinking about why we're doing it, it re-energizes people. It gives people a bit of energy back. isn't something to focus on. It gives them a bit of optimism and excitement for the future. So it's, you know, that's been great. It's been great even for me to see, because I've been working with the program for a couple of years, and at times you think of how are we going to keep people going, you know, but there is something in that vision that really does give people the energy back. And also them feeling that they have a sense, you know, that they have a way to manage it, they have agency around it, they have a say, they can control, you know, their own destiny in their own areas. So that's really important as well, and that helps with that.
Amazing. Excellent. And it feels like you've discovered a lot of the essential ingredients to facilitate and, I guess, become part of that change movement. So you mentioned a few of them. Knowing the vision helps to re-energize people. Knowing the purpose helps to re-energize people. What else would you say are those kind of essential ingredients to help facilitate impactful and sustainable change?
I think it's really important that people feel that, you know, the change is something that they're part of. It's not something that's been done to them, you know, that they have a say in it, that they have more than having a say, that they can guide it themselves, that they are the change. So that's really part of what we're trying to do at the moment. We're doing a big focus just over the last couple of months, and it'll be going on probably for most of this year, where we're working with clinical teams trying to think about how we're going to work together in the new hospital. So the new hospital is essentially built. Now it's really about how are we going to work there, because it's a beautiful building, but it's not really going to work unless we can figure out, as people delivering healthcare, how that's all going to work and how we're going to come together. So we've been bringing groups of staff together. We've been also talking to children, teenagers, and family members as well to get a sense of what they need and want out of it. But what, you know, overwhelmingly the message is, this is your project, you know, and anything that you think you can change now, and just tell us what you need to you know, what support you need to do it. So it's really important that that agency piece is there, that people feel they have the tools that they need. Obviously, you know, we are in a time poor environment, and you know, it can be really difficult to find the time and resources to do things. But I think what we're finding is that teams are coming out of our initial workshops feeling really excited about the future, and they're going back to base, and they're coming together, they're self-organizing, and they're starting to make changes in their own areas. So it's really magic when you can get that going. And I think we're very lucky with the dedicated teams that we have and the staff that we have that are really so passionate about, you know, child-centered care and human-centered care.
Amazing. I was so delighted to hear you say at the table, not only do you have the healthcare professionals, but you've got the kids, the teens, the families themselves. That's a really essential piece of the puzzle, isn't it? That traditionally hasn't really been there in kind of more kind of medical-led models of healthcare.
Yeah, and I think we'd like to do it even more, to be honest. I think it's definitely something that we think is really important. And certainly when the hospital was being designed, there was a lot of input in terms of what was wanted and needed in the new hospital. A lot of that went into the design. And when you go into the hospital now, you can really see that evidence. And similarly, when we're thinking about how we're going to work in the new, we're starting with the wards, and we're the analogy we've come up with, and this came from conversations with parents and patients. So in the new hospital, there's going to be single occupancy rooms. Every child that's admitted will have their own room, which is amazing. And there'll be a parent bed in the room, and there'll be views either internally or out to a garden or externally out over amazing views of the city, best city, views in the city, better than any hotel in Dublin, I'd say. Amazing views. So the analogy that the teams came up with was that the room is like the home for the family. It's like it's their anchor, and it's their base. And they're going to need, you know, to feel like that's a safe space, like a home from home, you know, where they can potentially, siblings can be there, homework could be done, potentially parents could be taking a Zoom call, or like life has to go on sometimes when it's particularly for children that are with us for long periods of time. So the room is kind of the home from home. And then they start to expand that analogy to the ward, and talking about that as the village. So outside your home, there might be an area that you know quite well, the faces are familiar, you know your way around, you know, without needing too much orientation. So the ward became known as the village, and then the wider hospital, because it is quite a big building, became known as the city. So if you're going out to the city, you might want to go and grab a cup of coffee, you go somewhere, but you might need a bit more orientation, and you might need to know exactly where you're going, and a bit more, you know, a bit more steering in terms of how you get there. So that's an analogy that's really grown, and we started to use that from that initial consultation that we did around the wards. That it's kind of become a bit of a living metaphor now. People are starting to pick it up and use it a lot.
It's so beautiful, isn't it? I love it because, Suze, you've got two small kids, and recently you did have to spend a couple of nights in hospital here in Cork. And I don't know if you would have described it like a home from home or a village.
No, but it is like that when you're in there. It becomes your new home for a while. You know, it's not a hotel room, and some bad stuff's gone down, and you have to just get on with it. And then outside your little cubicle is the ward. So you kind of get to know people slowly. And then down the corridor, you had the school and the playroom. You know, and 3 nights we were there, so we kind of got used to it. And I can see how it could work for very ill children who are there for longer periods of time, you know, and family members and siblings and all of that. So important, really.
Yeah. Oh my God. And that's so beautiful. And that analogy, it came out of your workshops with staff and with families.
Yeah, we're doing a lot of work around. So the process we're using for designing for engage in staff or engaging is a word that's very overused, but the process we're using for to help staff think about the future is design thinking. So we've taken it from, which you'd be very familiar, Sinead, and probably Susan as well. And obviously empathy is the centerpiece of design thinking. So design thinking is a methodology that comes traditionally from product design, you know, Apple, places like that, but it's, you know, increasingly been used across all sectors and in healthcare as well. And we find it's a great way just to give a little bit of a loose structure to staff when they come together, start thinking about this, about what they want to do. So, and the cornerstone of that is empathy. So what we're doing with all the workshops that we're doing is we have parents and family members coming into the room and having conversations with staff or in small groups, just trying to understand all, how was your experience in the ward? What, you know, what stood out for you, what worked really well, what could have been better, what might you have needed that wasn't there. And it's interesting, it's a big learning experience for staff as well, because, you know, they have to listen with different ears. They have to listen, not for factual accuracy necessarily, they listen to hear what the experience was, and they're not there to defend or to fix, they're just there to listen and hear. And it has a very deep, profound impact when they listen in that way. And sometimes that can be difficult for them, actually. And that's, you know, we have to support staff with that. But what comes out of that process is a very deep understanding and a real shift in thinking. So we always start off with a challenge that's very service-based, like how can we run our new cardiology ward, or how can we, you know, design an outpatient service. By the time you do your empathy piece, and you redefine what that challenge is. So instead of saying, how are we going to make the new cardiology wards work? You might say, how can we design, you know, how can we create an experience in the cardiology wards that's going to support parents and children in a certain way? So it totally flips the entire conversation from a service need, where we, as healthcare professionals, we, with the best will in the world, we always go out with that hat, to really thinking about, well, what would it be like if we really think about the children and families at the centre of this, like really think about what they need, and rather than not just clinically, from an experience point of view. So that's been a little bit of magic, really, in the process that we're doing.
It sounds like it. And not only are you guys thinking about it, you're bringing in those voices, and like you said, and deep listening to them.
Yeah.
And that's where the magic is happening.
Yeah.
Because many years ago, my little nephew was born here in Cork, and he had to get transferred to Crumlin Hospital. And what an amazing hospital Crumlin is. Like, the welcome we received arriving late at night, distressed from Cork, like from the porter who met us at the door to every single person we engaged with, it was as if we were the only people there.
Yeah.
And obviously we weren't. It's a very, very busy hospital. But to feel so held and so welcome and so listened to from the moment you step foot in it, it's really powerful.
Yeah, I'm delighted with the experience. I'm not surprised because it is an amazing hospital, as are all our hospitals. And I'm not just saying that to be political. We really are just so blessed with the staff and the culture of each of the hospitals and how they really just hold. As you said, I love the way you describe that, Sinead. Like you're held. You know, it's just that is exactly what you need.
Yeah.
You just need okay, we got you.
Yes.
What's going on? We know this is, a tough time. A lovely, lovely way to describe it.
So much. And I think we started to call them they seemed like angels in Crumlin. Every single person, the tea lady, the nurses, the students, the culture was just unbelievably kind and present. No hurry, no rush, from the consultants right throughout all clinical staffing levels and everybody you met with. It was an unbelievable experience. And that's, it's really lovely to hear ye guys asking far and wide those who will be using your service and working in the service, well, what is it that we can create? What experiences are we looking to create to make sure that this move to the National Children's Hospital, will be such a child-centered one and a family-centered one. Yeah, amazing. And speaking of culture and creating a culture that allows change to happen, do you have any insights or tips around that?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose I've been working around, so my background is in organization development. I'm currently working with leading an innovation as the innovation manager, but my background's around organization development. So a lot of time thinking about how we behave and act when we come together in groups and in organization in any way that we're organized. Really mainly in healthcare. So it's been really interesting, and I've had the chance to kind of be in one organization for a long time. So try something, see it completely drop dead and fail, but then see it somehow 2 years later just come, like we used to call it swamp monsters. They just comes out of the swamp, you're not expecting, you think it's dead, it resurrects itself. So there's something about, it's definitely about lighting as many different fires as you can and seeing which ones take. And it's about nudges rather than big changes, so many different angles as you can go at something, and really ultimately the biggest thing you need to understand is the culture. You can't really change culture. It's not something that's going to bend to our will. It's often very deep seated. It's been there for years. I mean, we've all experienced walking into a building and you nearly could feel the culture straight away, or even into an office in a building sometimes. There's definitely, culture is a very interesting, could be very slow moving, and then all of a sudden it can change. So you kind of have to just step into the river and just see what's going on first of all, and then start to think, try things. So it's like little nudges, little interventions. There's a really important role for leadership, for sure. And I've often thought, bottom-up approaches, are they enough? And I really don't think they are. I think you need to have that magic where bottom up meets top down, and there's this great big nuclear explosion in the middle. Let's not call it a nuclear explosion. Lovely fission or fizzing, a nice fizzing in the middle. So that's the sweet spot, I think, when you can get engaged and passionate leaders that really understand what needs to happen from a change point of view. And then you have that bottom up swell of people saying, we want change, we need change.
Nice.
In the middle to facilitate it.
Very good. That's great.
Yeah, facilitating change is something really close to my heart. And especially even from a feminist or female lens, it's like, you know, it's 2023. We still have gender pay inequality. We still have, you know, home caring and child caring and the one who provides most care in the home inequality. And it's like, ah, oh, you know, when will this change? And the UN have a recent report out and they say, you know, true gender equality is not going to come about for another 300 years.
Whoa, I didn't see that.
Yeah.
I must quote that to my sons. I'm always trying to quote things at them so they, because they think, oh, everything's fine. No, it's not.
No, it's not. So we've got to look at it from different angles, light as many fire as we can, from different angles and nudges. And then bottom up grassroots, the common people, and then change policy as well. And top down. I like the top down, bottom up. I like that. And I like that. It's good. Works.
Is that your new feminist change manifesto, Suze?
That was it.
Got
there.
Your bullet points.
Summary.
Yeah, it's great. Sign me up. But that's the thing. It, like you say, you need both. You need the people on the ground. So last week we had Joasia in speaking with us, and she was talking about the marches in Poland and how policy and constitution didn't really respond or change to that big outpouring of protest from the people on the ground. So it's like, okay, well, then what do we need our leaders to do in order to be better change facilitators and make the world a more just and equal place?
I wish I had the answer. I mean, I think it's a little bit, I suppose, I look at this country and what's attractive about going into politics, really? And, do you know, it's really that a question I think we need to be asking. Like, and really the big attraction probably is, you know, ego, right? It's like you'll be kind of invited to the chicken dinners and you'll be, you know, things like that. And so, but it's a really, really tough, you know, question. If you know, it's a bit like, yeah. It's not the most appealing for me anyway, for women, for work-life balance. Yeah. And that's before you get into, you know, criticism and, you know, as a woman, you know, that just looking at Holly Kearns, is it?
Yeah.
You know, just looking at just over the last, what she's gone through, you know, having that amazing success, being, you know, the leader of her party, and it's all about what she looks like. You know, is she young enough? Is she old enough? It's just,
yeah.
It's not attractive.
Tough station.
It is. And men don't get that scrutiny, obviously. You know,
don't get the same. I suppose Simon Harris would have got the, you know, the young thing, but they don't get the same level of scrutiny for sure. And then, so there's very few people that, and it's, you could say it's about leadership as well, a little bit. Like this, it's a tough gig, and you kind of have to sacrifice a lot to get to the top, right? The same in politics. And so there's people like, and it's probably a cliche to say, but Jessica Ardern, you know, who just personified the human person as a political leader. Like she was a human, and she was unapologetic about being a human, and just championed being a human, and gave me hope, because, you know, we just need more people like her and more systems that support people like her to rise to the top. I don't know how she did it.
Absolutely.
And she knew when, you know, she stepped down when the time was right for her, but now we know Jessica.
Jacinda, yeah. I know, I just read a great book. It was like,
Jacinda, is it?
Jacinda Ardern, yeah. Yeah, she is such a hero. And it was like, I read this great book and it was like, female leadership in a world gone wrong. And it was like a study of female leaders all over the world, like political and in business. And it was just kind of picking up on, okay, well, what are these common traits? And like you say, that kind of wearing the humanity on your sleeve versus wearing your ego on your sleeve.
Mm. And as your armor, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Or even a lot of female leaders, they often take quite a long and wide range view. So it may even be beyond their political term, but it's not going to serve them, but it's going to serve the greater
That's right.
good. of what's needed. So speaking of, I guess, the difference in female leadership, as a change leader and as a female, do you think there's a difference in approach between male and female change leaders?
You know, it's difficult to say, and I thought about this, and it's difficult to say. I think it's probably, it's a bit of a cliche to say where, you know, women tend to be more relationship based, and I don't know if I've necessarily seen that as a massive difference between men and women. I think it's more to do with your philosophy and, you know, your values. So yeah, I really struggle with that question, and I don't know why. So I'm curious about why I struggle with that question, but I couldn't really say that.
And on your team, would you have a gender balance? Would it be female heavy or a mixture?
So on my particular team, a very small team, and we've like three people and two girls, two women, two man. So it's balanced enough. I think overall, yeah, I'd say the balance is not that bad. Looking at the sector we're in and most of the staff they're interacting with, obviously nursing is a huge percentage of the workforce for us. They're our biggest group of staff, and obviously mainly women, because it's still a profession that attracts in mainly women and is quite gendered, really, you know, in terms of how people view it. So probably if you were to look at our workforce and how proportional it is in terms of the change piece, it mightn't be as proportional, but I don't know why I find that question difficult.
It's interesting
to think about and ponder.
Maybe because there isn't a difference, like you say, when you're working in the field of change, you know, you're bringing many tools from your toolbox.
I think I've seen a lot of different approaches, but it's not necessarily dependent on gender. I wouldn't have thought. It's, again, it's come back to values.
Awesome.
Good. That's good.
And we only have about 5 more minutes left. I'd love to hear, Anne, do you have any role models or even any female role models in your field?
In my field, I can't remember her name when I say she's a role model, but Jacinda Ardern, is it Jacinda? Why can't I remember her first name? Somebody, I suppose, just in terms of
We should get t-shirts.
I know.
As I said, just the way that she was so unapologetically human about everything that she did, you know, and just didn't play the game. She just didn't play the game, and she made playing the game the new not playing the game, you know. Yes. She I really just had so much respect for her.
Yeah, and that's so interesting, Anne, that's what stands out to you about Jacinda Ardern, because that's what stood out to me about you. When you came in to speak to us on our healthcare innovation postgrad, I was really taken aback by your humanness. Like I say, I'm so in awe of the massive job that you do, bringing so many staff on board with a huge change project. And I just loved your ease, your gentleness, your connectivity, like instantly. Very similar to what you see in Jacinda, I see in you.
Oh, thank you. That's a massive
lovely.
Be the biggest compliment I've ever gotten.
So true. So true.
Great. Well,
I think it's very important that you can connect with people. So like that day coming in to talk to you guys today, I mean it's a chance to connect to people, to hear from people, to learn something new. And if you're not going in as a human, you know, going in to listen and learn, you're really gonna miss some. And I did learn massive amounts, and I took things back up, reinstalled them and used them. So you know, that to me it's just common sense, just how we should all be engaging, right? We should just
totally. But like you said, we play the game, and we often have our little kind of repertoire of playing the game babble that we talk or that we put out on first. But it's like, actually, let's park all that. And through listening, like that deep listening that you were talking about as part of your process, and that empathy and that human connection, that's where true magic emerges. And I think within that, that's where true change can emerge from.
I completely agree. I think so many things, I mean, you were asking earlier about the secret about change, and really it's conversation. Really, that's the key ingredient of change, the key tool, the key unit of change is a conversation. And if people could just find a way, have conversations, human to human, person to person, putting down the baggage. And that's not easy, actually. That sounds like it should be something really simple, but it's not. So sometimes it does take facilitation. I'm a big believer, as a facilitator for over 30 years, I'm a big believer in facilitation as a really important skill set in any organization, any group, to help people to have really good, productive conversations where people are really listening and there is a curiosity about what's been said.
Absolutely.
Brilliant.
Yeah, add that to the manifesto, Suze.
Yeah.
Conversation. Putting down the baggage and a really good conversation. So, Anne, if we are looking for a change leader to shake up the patriarchy, can we give you a call?
I'd be a change facilitator. How about that?
Great. You're hired. Thanks. Suze will design the sweatbands, the Jacinda Ardern t-shirt.
Looking forward to the merch.
Yeah. They'll be great merch. And actually, that's something we were talking about as well last week. Is there a global symbol for like feminism or being an ally of feminism? Like that visual, like I got the word, like how you said about the storytelling and the visual of the wars, you know, I think it's really important.
And it's a tough time for feminism. We need to, it's a very tough time, I think, at the moment, because we're getting pulled in all different directions. And
We need the merch. Yeah,
we need the merch.
We'll get on it. And it's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you, Anne.
I have learned so much. You filled me with hope and optimism. Changes.
I really needed it on this Monday. I really needed it.
Thank you. Lovely. That flew by. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks,
amazing.
Guys.
Thank you. Thank you, Anne. What a delight.
Inspiring. Inspiring lady.
So inspiring. So myself, Susan, Anne, we sat down over Zoom yesterday evening and had this conversation. And myself and Susie were so inspired, weren't we, Suze?
Yeah, she's amazing. I learned a lot, actually, from her. And
same.
Yeah.
And I'm sure our listeners have a lot to digest, as well as start getting your credit cards ready for the merch that Suze is designing. So while you're digesting all of those juicy thoughts, we're going to go to a song selected by Anne. It's by The Sundays and it's called When I'm Thinking About You.
Sky.
thank you to the Sundays, and thank you to Anne. We are so delighted to know that you're beaming optimistic, joyful self is part of this big change process that's going on up in Dublin with all the children's hospitals. Because we do get quite a lot of bad press, don't we, Sue? It's about the children's hospital. So
yeah, it was great to hear some positive feedback about the whole thing. And yeah, I think it should be more on media mainstream.
I think so. And I love that image that Anne gave us of what they're working on. You know, that idea of the ward is like the village. And the child's room is like the home. So the home, the village,
living
the
metaphor,
city. Yeah,
she
absolutely.
She said it's great.
And absolutely. And even, you know, I felt like I've learned a lot from Anne around change strategies. Mm. So you were writing your feminist manifesto, Suze.
Yeah, I was. Yesterday I was thoroughly inspired by her. Her change strategy concept, light as many fires as you can.
Love that
one.
See
what catches.
Love that.
Yeah.
Light as many fires as you can. Isn't that just a fantastic image?
Especially with Bealtaine around the corner now as well.
Absolutely. So let's say that again.
Light
as many fires
as
you can. That's
see
just
what catches.
That's just fantastic. And even expanding on that, Anne was saying, you know, often with that light as many fires attitude, you give some little nudges and have many different angles.
Different, yeah.
And I love that image as well of the swamp monsters, as she called them. So there you are, giving the nudges, lighting as many fires as you can. You're like, oh, nothing caught there. And then 2 years down the line, you're like, oh, there goes that. And it's just taking off like a swamp.
You've inspired passion in somebody and it's just grown and grown and
exactly. Even though you may have thrown the towel in and were like, well, that didn't roll. But then out comes the swamp monster.
Also her bottom-up approach and her top-down approach.
Mm.
So ignite passion in the leaders at the top, change policy and strategy and law, hopefully. And then from bottom-up approaches from all of the people together, standing together.
Yeah, I was thinking about that on my jog this morning. I was like, remember Anne called it like nuclear fission or nuclear reaction. It's like, yeah, well, you know, it is that kind of magic dance, isn't it? To have that energy on the ground, that bottom-up energy, and then that top-down leadership where
them.
They meet.
You need them both.
You
again, back
do.
To Bealtaine now. The magic fire dances.
You're totally in the Bealtaine zone.
I
forgot all
it.
About it.
Have fire now, get the fire, pit
yeah,
out.
Good idea.
Next weekend, it's the weekend after, is it?
I guess the 1st of May is on Monday.
Yeah.
And then a 2nd on Tuesday.
Yeah.
So when is Bealtaine? Is it 1st or 2nd?
Not sure. I must look it up. It's coming up soon.
But main thing, light the fires.
Light the fires.
And get the magic.
See what catches.
And the dancing going. Yeah. And I really loved as well that idea of, remember Anne was describing to us how they were using that design thinking model, and at the center of design thinking is empathy and understanding. So therefore at the center of that, it was that real deep listening.
Yeah, very good. Especially with the nurses and the workers who will be working in the hospital for them to look at it. Besides a factual and service point of view, which is obviously is completely necessary, but to look at it from for the needs of the family and the kids who are going to be in there and are going to be quite ill. Empathy at the key, so empathy is at the heart of design thinking.
This is going forward
with all design thinking and innovation.
So design thinking is a framework. It's got like a 6-step model, and it's a real human-centered design process. And isn't it mad even have to say that? You'd hope everything is designed with that idea of bringing everybody on board and listening. But traditionally, services have been designed by the experts, and you can't see me, but I'm doing inverted commas here, as in by the healthcare professionals, without really consulting the service users. So
planning in general, I'd say, even like town planning, everything.
That's true. Absolutely. So design thinking is shaking that model up, and it's bringing diverse voices to the table.
Very good.
Or to the Lego boardroom, as would be my design thinking approach. Yeah, similar to Anne. Anne is a
Lego
serious play facilitator. I haven't done the training, but I love Lego as a medium for that kind of design thinking and planning piece. But we're going off tangent now, Suze, aren't we?
Yeah, I also had to look up agency, having agency. I didn't really know. I kind of knew what you meant, but I said look it up. So sense of agency refers to the feeling of control over your actions and their consequences in a design for workers, for people who are going to be working in the hospital. This gives people a sense of control, which change is necessary.
Mm. And I loved how frank Anne was. She was like saying to the staff, this is your opportunity. Mm-hmm. Tell us what you want. What do you think can work better? And how can we design it to be better?
Absolutely.
Which is great. So yeah, back to our feminist manifesto. There is so much that we can learn from change leaders and so much we can learn from people like Anne working in the field, actually making change happen. So our top tips, light the fires, the nudges.
See what catches.
I really love the idea of have the conversations.
Yeah.
And it's not just having a conversation, but a conversation has that dual piece, doesn't it? The conversation and the deep listening.
Indeed. The deep listening is a skill.
It is, isn't it?
It is. And do you think that it's like you leave your baggage at the door, so you listen and you're saying how you feel with empathy?
I think leave your baggage at the door could be a little bit even like leave your armor and your ammunition at the door.
Okay.
I don't know if we got to chat about this on air, but when I was traveling, I was faced with some conversations that were really difficult. And some of these conversations were around people that I met, and they didn't believe that there was a problem with gender inequality. Mm-hmm. So that's obviously a subject that's very close to my heart, is speaking about gender inequality. So then meeting people who didn't believe it was a problem, it was a very difficult conversation to have. But to have that conversation, I had to leave my baggage at the door. I had to not get so angry that I couldn't form my words. Mm-hmm. So that idea of what Anne was saying was have the conversations and leave the baggage at the door. It was be like, have the conversations, you know, put what you think on the table. But remember to try your best to kind of leave the additional stuff that isn't going to serve the conversation at the door. Mm-hmm. So I could have got really rageful and really angry and just shut down this conversation that I was going to have with this person who was like, well, men and women are equal now. Mm-hmm. And I really had to consciously park my baggage and then start to unpack my side of the story.
Yeah,
does that make sense?
Difficult.
Yeah. Difficult.
Not to get your emotions involved.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally.
Have your facts, be factual, clear.
Yes. Have your categories about where you see gender inequality and just lay them out on the table.
Whoa.
Yeah. Difficult, but good practice.
Yeah, good practice. After dinner drinks.
No. Oh. It was a loose leaf tea. It was in Canada. No booze, a lot of tea. So what was I going to say? Yeah, so some really great tips there that we've added to the manifesto. And not only really great tips, but a lot of optimism.
Indeed. And, you know, maybe we need to have some patience as well. Things probably aren't going to change super fast, but nudging it along and forgetting that we're not going away. We're not going anywhere.
That's true. Nudging it along and even remembering just those swamp monsters, you know,
sometimes
you can get disheartened. You're like, oh my God, it's 2023. There still is a gender pay gap. You know, women still do an unequal share in the home. What the hell? And it's like, okay, but keep having the conversations, keep lighting the fire, keep nudging, and we'll get there.
Okay, let's go to a song.
We will, Suze. We've only got a few minutes left, so this is going to be our sign-out tune.
Really?
Speaking of lighting the fires in Bjeltna, we're going to round it up with the Prodigy and the Firestarter. Did you get to see the Prodigy when they came to Cork in the 90s?
I saw Four Dimension twice. I don't know if I saw the Prodigy.
Oh, I saw them. They were supporting Oasis.
Where? In the park?
Yeah.
Sure.
Oh, it's great crack.
Was it?
Yeah, they're awesome. Yeah.
See Four Dimensions. Everyone see
that? No. So we're going to kick it off and finish our show with the Firestarter. The Prodigy. Thank you so much for listening.
Light your fire for Beauton, everyone.
Absolutely.
Let those fire pits.
Yeah, keep those nudges going. Keep the conversations going. And thank you
we'll
for
be here
listening.
Next week.
Yeah, we'll be here next week for more conversation and great tunes. Take care.
Bye.